All right, welcome, everyone. Thanks for your patience. Real quick, since we do have a new commissioner, and it'd be nice if everybody could just introduce themselves real quick.
Marlon Bates, K-State Research and Extension, Douglas County.
I'm the chair of the Extension Council, and I'm
We're not ready for you yet.
Katie Barnett, Animal Welfare Council for the Lawrence Humane Society.
Megan Scheibe, outgoing interim executive director for the Lawrence Humane Society.
Heather McPeak, Education and Outreach, Douglas County Conservation District.
I'm Randy Winchester, also with the Douglas County Conservation District.
Thanks for being here this morning.
So I feel like I have to preface this one. We've structured these budget hearings a little differently than we've done in the past. We've tried to set them up somewhat by service area. This might be my biggest stretch as a service area. So please don't be offended by who you're at the table with. Hopefully no one feels that way. But I am aware that everything you do is more than just land management and animal management, and you don't do a lot of land management. But this was really an opportunity we thought where we could just have these different agencies together to sort of talk a little bit about what's happening in their field. We do have a supplemental request from Extension that we need to have time at the end to get to a conversation about that. And we did initially schedule 45 minutes for this conversation, but we are running a little bit behind by about 15 minutes. So if I can gain time, I'll gladly make it. So I guess maybe if you could just quickly, like in a few minutes, sort of give an outline of some of the service you do here, and then how you collaborate with other partners. That's really been a theme that we've been trying to talk a lot about, is how everyone collaborates together with folks at this table and with folks not at this table. So with that, I guess maybe I'll turn it over to you.
Sure. The focus of the Douglas County Conservation District is basically remediating, mitigating, or helping with environmental resource concerns that relate to agriculture. That's our area of focus. We do work with the Kansas Department of Agriculture. Our secondary focus is education regarding those same concerns, environmental and conservation practices and resource concerns. We partner with area RAPS. We partner with the Natural Resource Conservation Service, and I have Tim Miller here if you need to ask him any questions. Also the Farm Service Agency. We try and partner with other agencies not directly associated with us, such as K-State and Extension. A couple of years ago, we collaborated on a $50,000 National Association of Conservation Districts grant. Other entities in the area, such as the Grassland Heritage Foundation, just anybody who's willing to work with us, we're willing to collaborate with them. We figure we're all in this together, and we know there's limited resources, so if we can multiply our efforts and our abilities by collaborating with other partners, we're always more than happy to do that.
So the Lawrence Humane Society is the only animal welfare organization serving pets and people that love them in Lawrence and Douglas County. We do have agreements with the county as well as a contract with the city to provide housing and shelter and care and placement options annually. That is about 4,500 animals that come through our doors every year. We have a very high rate of success with our placements. We place more than 94% of our pets into new and loving homes, or return them to their owners, or find alternate placement options for them. About 2 weeks ago, we just opened our brand new shelter facility. We soft opened it and are in the process of working through the last final kinks and getting moved in. But it's been a huge boon to what we're going to be able to do in the future. One of the challenges we faced in the past with rehabilitating animals and treating animals with challenging medical and behavior issues has been the fact that our facility hasn't supported the work that we're trying to do. We didn't have dedicated isolation space. We didn't have a clinic that was sufficient enough to provide the care that the animals needed. And therefore, that trickled down into the animals that we were able to place and the services we were able to provide for the community. Now that we have that facility open, we are looking to expand our partnership opportunities. I did mention that we've got partnerships with both the city and the county. We also work with several smaller municipalities and surrounding areas that don't have their own shelter or animal control agencies to provide the state statute required housing and care for those animals during their stray hold period. In addition to that, we work with local nonprofits, including the Willow, the Community Shelter, Trinity, to provide placement options for pets that their clients have that they aren't able to care for. We also have a pet retention program that helps keep pets in homes with their owners when their owners may not be able to afford whatever the situation is, be it medical care, training, temporary boarding. And we work with local businesses. In addition to that, we partner closely with the Douglas County Sheriff on investigations and work with them to help prosecute and support their investigations for victims of animal cruelty and abuse. And we work with other local shelters as well as K-State on those cases and situations where they're having issues placing pets as well. Local business-wise, we do partner with all of the local pet stores in the area and work with them on advanced placement options and anything we can do to not only help the pets that need us, but help pets in the community that are owned by loving people that may just need a little bit of extra support. So those are all services and programs that we're looking to grow now that we've got the space to support that, including but not limited to trap neuter release programs for community cats and high volume Lacoste spay and neuter for the community, because it's a service that they've told us that they desperately want.
So thank you for the opportunity to be here. Certainly not offended to be among the group of category of land and animal. Sarah, thank you for this opportunity. We're happy to share with you as much or as little as you want to know. So at K-State Research and Extension Douglas County, we are one of 105 extension offices in this state, same number of counties. We're in every county in the state. We're statutorily established in 1951 by the Kansas Extension Council law. Part of that dictates how we are to be sort of operating, and we have an elected body of 24-member extension council, from which 9 members are selected on an annual basis to serve on our executive board. So we have members in the gallery, as well as Brenna Wolfpool, our current president or chair of the Extension Council. We've got former and current Extension Council members behind me, as well as some of our staff. In the event that you have questions that you'd like to ask of them, they're here for that purpose, and also just to show support. As it relates to partnerships, or maybe I should start with our mission. So we are committed to a safe, sustainable, healthy food and fiber system, as well as thriving communities, families, and youth through integration of research education. So one of those things that we truly value, and I think as a system are beginning to value more and more, is our inability to really affect change at a systems level independent of other partners. And so I love the opportunity to speak about our partnerships. We have an extensive list of partners. As you know, we have program areas in community development, 4-H and youth development, family and consumer science, agriculture, natural resources, and horticulture. And so those program areas often are out there and finding their own partnerships. We also work to collaborate internally to ensure that we're taking advantage of our strategic uniqueness as it relates to what all we house under our roof. So one of the things about these partnerships, and something I think that is becoming more and more apparent, not just in society, but within our system, is the value of collective impact. And so if you're familiar with collective impact framework, it's the necessity to bring similarly oriented organizations under one sort of effort, and oftentimes those efforts require the sort of structural support of a backbone organization. We like to think that we serve as a backbone organization for a lot of different efforts across Douglas County. And so, you know, you can look at things like Live Well Douglas County as an example of a coalition that that certainly is made up of a lot of different entities and individuals representing different agencies, and also just concerned citizens. And so, you know, the work of those working groups and that executive committee of Live Well Douglas County is a prime example of effectiveness as it relates to bringing the assets of community agencies together, but also making an effect on sort of long-term health outcomes of members of our community. So the Healthy Food for All and the Healthy Built Environment Work Groups of Live Well Douglas County are essentially charged with 1/4 of the community health plan. We've been playing an instrumental role in the organization of those work groups, and we also have a staff member who serves as the director of Work Well Lawrence, which is sort of a little bit of a different take, but certainly has everything to do with health and wellness. So that's just one example. We've got lots and lots of different examples within all of our program areas, but for the sake of brevity, I'll stop short there.
Thank you. Any general questions for? Quick question about the Humane Society,
yes.
Not related to budget, but you guys gonna have a ribbon cutting or some big celebration?
We are. So while we're in the new building is not yet complete. There are a few things that are still remaining. And if you drive by, it's a giant construction zone once again, because they today started the process of tearing down the old facility and finishing out the parking lot. So once all of that is complete, we're looking to have a ribbon cutting, and hopefully by that point in time there will be a new executive director that can lead that, but probably August or September is what we're looking at, but I would invite all of you to come for a tour.
Well, thanks for stepping up as the interim during this time, and yeah, I'm sorry to see you go.
You know, the team is fabulous. Katie's fabulous. Kirk Putman, who is replacing me as interim, is sitting back there, so he'll be in touch to meet with all of you, and you know, I trust that everybody here is going to be in a really great place, and the community has the shelter it deserves.
I would just, that was a lovely note. I don't want to get off of that too much, but just a quick question. There's so much change going on right now, transitioning to the building and new leadership and all. This is a big, probably a topic for future conversation, but do you foresee your expansion of services in, like, you know, after hours care or something beyond 5 o'clock?
Sure. So our operating hours daily are 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. We do have staff on call 24/7, and that's a program we've had in place for as long as I've been involved with the organization, to provide pickups for injured and ill stray animals. We did do a community assessment and a huge survey in advance of the new facility to explore. I know several people have brought up, you know, an urgent care facility within the city of Lawrence and Douglas County, an expansion of services that way. That's not a budget model that's sustainable for a nonprofit organization, but because we do provide that care to stray animals, that is something we plan to continue. The expansion of services that we've talked about really dials back to what the community said they wanted and were willing to participate in, and what they were willing to fund with their generous dollars. So the three big main ones there are the low-cost spay and neuter. We were doing that a few days a week, a few surgeries a day at our old facility because the facility wouldn't let us do that. There is no other low-cost clinic in Lawrence, and there now all of the clinics in KCK and the Kansas side in Kansas City have or are shutting down. So there is a real need for that with the community to provide those services. TNR was another big one, trap, neuter, release for community cats. We just finished working with the city to update the ordinances there so that we can legally now do that. So we have started that program with them and actually have a meeting with them this afternoon to talk about how it's going. And then the third thing is really community education and outreach. So if you've been to our facility, you know the old facility didn't have a space to bring the community in. There was no multi-purpose room. There was no community education center. We now have that. So those are our big three that we're starting with per our strategic plan. And then as new leadership comes in and we evaluate how the facility transition is going and how everything is going with the three programs that we're committed to doing right off the bat, I'm sure there will be discussion about how to expand further.
One question on, you caught me on that, the low-cost spay and neuter, with those services shutting down in Kansas City and kind of surrounding areas, are you providing low-cost spay and neuter for non-Douglas County residents, and
yeah,
are people from Kansas City bringing their
We haven't been receiving a ton of requests. We do get some from kind of rural Johnson County, people that are equally as close to Lawrence and Douglas County as they are to Kansas City. But, you know, when I first started in 2015, we would get upwards of 10 to 15 calls a day for people asking for referrals, people locally, and we were sending those people there. Our priority is always to serve the people in the communities we serve first, but we do have partnerships with the Topeka Community Cat Fix, for example. They're a TNR group out of Topeka, and they don't have a full-time vet, so we do schedule special days for the partners that we work with in other areas that don't detract from what we're able to provide for the community.
Thanks.
Okay, so you do have somebody on staff or available 24/7 to pick up stray or injured animals throughout the county?
Yes.
Okay. And let's say the animal's injured and needs like immediate care, what happens then?
Depending on the level of care, we have a partnership with Blue Pearl in Kansas City. So we have an agreement with them where after hours, if it's something emergent that needs immediate emergency care, we will provide that care. Blue Pearl will provide transport and take the animal out there. If it's something minor that we can treat with our staff, we do that at the shelter and then the veterinarians are in the next day. Or if it's something in between, something gravely urgent and something minor, then we'll call a vet in. We have vets on call every night as well.
Okay. So if somebody hit an animal out on some county road in the middle of the night or something, or came across one
yes.
in need of care, and let's say they called the non-emergency number or 911 like they shouldn't.
Right.
They would be able to give them or put them in touch with somebody that's on call?
Yeah, dispatch has our on-call phone number, so they'd contact us. And, okay. and we do the same thing for our fosters that we have. We've got an emergency on-call number for situations outside of normal operating hours. But we are on 24/7, 365, so.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. Anything for?
Something.
Okay, so just the supplemental, is that what we're?
Are we ready to move on to that?
Or do you have anything?
Well, I have some questions for the Conservation District, just a few. Number one, so our county has just undergone a F4 tornado and massive flooding just a season of despair in the ag community, at least the farmers I know. And so my question is, what is the Conservation District doing specifically in this season to reach out to farmers who have been impacted by these events?
We have worked with Marlin and a couple of others with regard to the F4 tornado. Well, we're part of a subcommittee with regard to that, and we're looking at things. Unfortunately, with an event like a tornado, there's not a lot we can do for the agricultural community, at least this time of year. Most of their crops, because of the flooding, weren't planted, or if they were planted, they were at such a small growth stage that the tornado didn't do any
right.
real damage to them that's not going to be recoverable from.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Okay. No. Yeah.
Well, have you offered the partnering with NRCS any of the kind of EQIP natural disaster, emergency disaster response?
The NRCS
projects
I do believe has a response to the flooding. And that's been the main concern of the large-scale agriculture producers. The F4 tornado, come and gone. But the flooding's still here, and it may continue throughout the summer. There are farmers who haven't got their corn planted by a specific date, so they can't get crop insurance.
Right.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I guess I'm wondering, because you all help fund, partially with our money and other federal dollars and all of that, actual infrastructure changes to farms that might have been impacted by the tornado, by the flooding, by this season of upset. Like, have you been reaching out to farmers to see if their infrastructure has been impacted and then offering assistance?
What do you mean by infrastructure?
Well, damage to pond dams or to soil erosion that might happen because
okay.
of extreme
we've not,
events
no,
on their
we,
land.
We've not done any specific outreach.
Mm-hmm.
Right now we have more applications than we can fund just from the regular farming community. We're limited in scope as to how much money we get from the state to conduct that type of infrastructure improvement. So we have a very limited sign-up period, and it runs from April to the 1st of June. And once we get the applications in, we then have to rank them per state guidelines. It says, is it in this watershed? Is it this close to a Blue Line Creek? And a series of other specifics that the state says, here's how we want you to decide what's most important and what's not. So even if somebody was affected by the flooding and they're not in a certain area of the county, there's nothing we can do for them, and the state's not giving us any additional money for that.
So the disaster funds that are set aside by the NRCS through the EQIP fund specifically for disaster response is not something that you all can...
I would have to let Tim speak to that.
The funds we have for disaster...
Tim, I'm going to need you to come up to the microphone.
Okay. Over there.
Okay, just sit down at the ear and borrow that microphone.
Or have a seat, either one. At a microphone. Yeah, it's great.
The funds we have for disaster planning was the EWP. I think you guys got my email about EWP. It dealt with mostly about infrastructures and roads, if there was erosion going on like that. When it comes to actual flooding and stuff, EQIP's always available. We took all the applications we had. In fact, I actually utilized the district this year because we don't allow for patching on terraces. The district does, so therefore I sent a lot of people to them for that. And then the ones that the state doesn't pick up, I'm going to give them EQIP applications to address their needs next year.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
We are going to have a talk after the rain to bring FSA, NRCS, and the county together to talk about some of the issues farmers are having and what programs are offered.
Thank you. Another question. So what's the status of the demonstration farm?
Unfortunately, the owners of the demonstration farm, who our original lease was with, sold it to a developer. So it's going to, well, eventually, once our lease runs out, they're not going to renew it. So what we're looking at doing at this point is taking money from our enterprise account, which is money we earn through seed sales and using our grass drill and so forth, taking money from that account and actually purchasing a piece of ground so that we can put on it all of those practices we want to do without any limitations by an outside party. Possibly at some point in the future, put a small structure on it so we can hold education events there. The property is going to have to be pretty specific. It's going to need to be farmable. We'd like a creek on it so we can show creek erosion and how to deal with that, maybe a wetland, just kind of an all-encompassing education center. And that's probably where we're headed. Right now, my board is on hold with deciding what to do until the people who purchased, the developers who purchased the property, decide whether or not they want to renew, not if they want to renew our lease, but if they will keep us in our lease for another year. If they're going to let us out of the lease, then we'll probably go ahead and take that road and then look for another property to purchase that we'll control because we own it.
So if you're looking to purchase another property, then is that specifically with funds outside of funds that Douglas County provides?
Correct, yes. This is through our enterprise account.
Okay.
The enterprise account is how the district earns money, not as opposed to getting money from an outside source. Prior to my coming to the district, there was a huge sign up for CRP, and they made tens of thousands of dollars through the use of their drill and through the use of selling seed.
So does that account for nearly $400,000 in your ending
fund? No, that's a separate account.
That's a whole separate account. So we're not seeing that enterprise budget.
No, this is just our operations account.
Okay.
And how it got up to that number, it was that the $200,000 or so before I got here. I think you can see in looking at it that we run pretty steady, trying to stay within budget. And so our revenue at the, or our retained revenue at the end of each year is about 238, 234. The 330 there includes the one with the $50,000 grant we received, so that's why there's that bump. But total expenditures also, you can see they run pretty close to the vest, 100 mid-120s, or except for the 151, and again, that's where we were spending that grant money down that we'd received the year before.
I don't want to dominate this conversation. I actually have a pretty long list of questions for you that sure. are specifically for your agency.
Okay.
Is there any chance you'd be available on Monday morning to come back?
Oh, absolutely.
That'd be great.
Okay.
Thank you. So we would make that arrangement after. I think we might do that with another agency as well later okay. this morning. So mm-hmm. I think what we can do is just kind of negotiate that time with you.
I'm real flexible.
Later in the day.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. So are we ready for the discussion on the supplemental? Commissioner Kelly, did you have anything before that?
No.
Okay. So we have one supplemental, is that correct?
Yes. And supplemental from the Extension Council. So we'll just turn it over to you for discussion of the supplemental.
Okay. Well, just curious about what questions you might have. I think we can make this as complicated as you desire. I guess to boil it down to something very simple, we have been consistently increasing the level to which we are drawing down our operating reserve fund. The reason that we're doing that is because we're paying people more. We do have one individual who we moved from a halftime position to a 0.8 FTE, 32 hours a week position, a little less than 2 years ago. So that's also contributed to that factor. So at any rate, when our budget committee met earlier this year to craft a budget for the 2020 process for this process, we decided that we would ask for a supplemental budget request to sort of draw that rate at which our operating reserve was declining down. So I think we're committed to contributing to our operating costs from our operating reserve at the rate we're doing it as presented in 2020. We don't feel like that's able to do for very long at all. And so we felt like it would be an appropriate time to pitch it to the commission that we submit a request for an increase.
Marlon, can I ask what your plan was at the time when you increased that staffing in terms of, I mean, spending it out of fund balance is never sustainable. So what
sure.
was your plan at the time in towards of
yep.
meeting the revenues?
Absolutely. So in my conversation with the then county administrator, we indicated that that's a position in accordance and in conjunction with the agent that is a program assistant who works with one of our extension agents. That between the two of them, that we'd be able to capture the roughly $9,000-$10,000 a year in increase in salary expenses that we would be subjected to, and also spoke to then county administrator about the health insurance component of that, which of course is a line item in your budget that we don't necessarily request, but obviously are grateful to receive.
That if you don't want it, I'd be glad to take right. it back. If it depends on how you phrase that, Marlon.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. What's
so what
the
was
question?
That about?
Well, you have made a request to have health insurance through the county. I mean, that's was an ask of Extension to have those employees covered. If that's not something Extension wants, we don't have to extend it.
No.
Okay, so that's why I want you to
restate.
Is that
what that sounded like?
That's
yeah,
what
that's
that sounded like.
That's how it
yes.
sounded.
No. Please don't.
But, so, and I guess I wasn't clear on, so when you spoke with Craig, you knew it was going to be coming out of fund balance, but the plan was long-term to make an ask? Like
so,
this,
so our actually, so what you'll see, one of the things if you look at the spreadsheet, one of the things that you'll see is that we are now looking to capture $25,000 of our non-appropriated funds. So that's historically been just purely an in-out fund. So this is, you know, 4-H camp revenue that we have to pay out to the 4-H camp. So we get the money from the kids and then we send the money out to the camp. or any other program. So we hold a meeting, we charge a registration fee because we're going to have lunch or whatever, and then we pay out the lunch. So that's an in-out account and has traditionally has largely been treated as such. Now we are including in our budget a capture of $25,000. So if you look at our 2020 budget request, you'll see that yes, we are drawing down and planning to, without the supplemental budget request, it would look like 60-some thousand dollars that our operating reserve would be decreased. But that's taking into consideration a capture of $25,000. So if we weren't doing that, we'd be looking at a much larger number coming from our operating reserve, from our cash balances, if that makes sense.
So it'll come from those operating revenues you receive from fees or grants. $25,000.
That's correct.
Dollars will come from that that has not previously come from in the past.
It can't come from grants. So one of the things that we haven't been good at historically as an institution is capturing overhead in grant funds, and a lot of granting agencies do permit that. A lot of them don't, but where they do permit it, we're doing what we can to capture those. Did that answer the question? Do you still have further questions regarding how we're paying for that $9,000 to $10,000?
So of the $50,000 you're asking for, $75,000 is the total shortfall, $25,000 is coming from your existing revenue sources. How much of that is related to the new position, the newish position?
I'm not sure I fully understand the question, Sarah.
I guess I'm trying to, if $75,000, you're going to be taking out of your fee revenues and using it to support your ongoing revenues, your
That's
ongoing
right.
expenses.
That's right.
And your ask of the county is $50,000. So that's in essence $75,000 new dollars coming into your operating fund to pay for things, expenses.
Right.
How much of that is related to the new position that was approved
for 2020?
You expanded in 2016.
For 2020, that would be, we've calculated a 3% in salary increase for a 2020 budget. So that would be $9,000, $10,000 plus 3%. It would be on top of what we would have already been subjected to had we kept that person at a half-time position.
So I have some different questions.
Hey, Patrick, can you?
Yep, sorry. So one of the things we get in our book here is sort of a community partnership overview that gives us the percentage of your total of your budget
right.
that is funded by Douglas County,
sure.
right?
Yeah.
Are you aware of the percentage that that is? So it's around 55. This would move it up to over 55%.
Sure.
Right? Okay. And so I'm sure you've done this. I just would like to hear, it sounds to me like, I mean, you talked about, I'm glad you talked about the non-appropriated funds, because that's where I was headed,
sure.
you know, is that how, just illuminate me on your board's discussion about the fees that you charge for services and how those are related to the costs of running the organization. Because it almost sounds like you're not charging enough to be able to establish a fund balance. And so maybe I'm just not understanding. I mean, just help me sort of walk through your board's thoughts on that.
So point of clarification, why is it that you feel like we're not charging enough to establish a fund balance?
Well, my experience in budgets is that usually fund balance comes from funds that you didn't spend, right? So rather than creating a budget request for a fund balance,
right.
it comes from these are funds that we didn't spend. We tried to stay tight as we could on this, or we extended, and that includes some of the fees that we may charge for services that we're not charging enough because we're not creating a fund balance here,
right?
So part of deciding how much to charge is making sure you're putting enough aside so that if an event doesn't happen and you still need to pay somebody, you have that money available
right.
in your budget. So I'm just, does that make sense?
Yeah,
that's
so
what I got there.
I'll attempt to speak to that and let me know if I don't do a sufficient job to you. Question. So I think we're really good at that in some of our programmatic areas. I think, I just look at the Call Valley Farm Tour, for instance. I mean, there you've got a program where we have a staff person who is paid by the revenue generated from that program, and we're able to cover all the expenses and generally build that account in the event that we have a year like we did last year where it just poured rain both days of the Call Valley Farm Tour. So we've got that cushion that's in there. And so I think there are examples within the sort of whole organization that we have really good success at that. Other complicating factor on that, and maybe the other areas where we aren't so good at that is where we do intentionally keep costs low. So, you know, a prime example is historically, whenever we've gotten a $5,000 grant, we've written it for $5,000 out. Mm-hmm. And so that's the mentality of the organization, I think, as an institution as a whole. Our extension offices, not just across the state, but across the country, have this mentality of doing what we can to deliver things at low to no cost. And that, I think, probably stems from a handful of things. One, a longevity of doing it that way. But two, we're often addressing audiences that would only participate if they were low or no cost. Where we... Maybe I had a third one in my mind there. And if I think about it, I'll get back to you. But I think the trend that we're seeing now is that as an institution, at least as a local unit in Douglas County, we're getting better at that. We're not just getting better at capturing dollars when we're asking for dollars to cover our overhead, like you're speaking to, but we're getting better at landing dollars, which means we're asking for more. So the volume at which our grant proposals are flying through the door is much greater than it was 5 years ago. Uh-huh. Having said that, it's not anywhere near where we would be able to fund, and I'm not sure where you would rather see that percentage coming from the county, but I think that's the kind of expertise that we would develop over time. Okay. Not a switch we could just turn on.
Just trying to understand. I think a request for fund balance is unique. I think everyone would like to increase their fund balance. So, I'm just trying to figure out how we got there. I'm just trying to figure out the process that your board went to get to a request for fund balance.
So, it sounds like you might be under the impression that what we're trying to do is increase our non-appropriated funds. Is that what you're saying?
No.
Our operating fund, reserve?
It sounds like you're trying to increase your fund balance and that they're what they're requesting.
What we're doing, Commissioner, is attempting to decrease the rate at which that fund reserve is diminishing.
Right. Okay. Yeah, we're saying the same thing
Semantics.
In two different ways. Yes.
Uh-huh. I guess I don't really see it that way.
Okay.
So the difference, if you look at page 4, right? Three. Mm-hmm. So the difference in receiving the supplemental request and not receiving the supplemental request
right. Is
if we don't receive it and the board decides to go forward with a 3% salary pool as planned, uh-huh. Is that our fund balance will have a end of year 2020 balance of 170, uh-huh. Right, compared to the projected 230 at the end of this calendar year. Whereas if we do get the funds, additional appropriation, we'll be looking at 220, so we'll only be spending $10,000 of our fund balance. Where historically, that's not been something that's contributed to our bottom line. I mean, we haven't drawn from.
Right.
In order to balance the book.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I okay. think we just may need to have a further discussion about how we put together the budget of your organization. It's just the way that you're coming at it, I think, is interesting to me as a commissioner. I would have maybe asked for it in your request to the county as your total ask rather than a supplemental request for your, you know, because you're trying to get to that 3% increase is what I'm understanding.
I'm trying to cover 3% increases
right.
over the course of several years,
right.
yes.
So your budget yes. increase instead of 5-10 maybe should have been 3% more.
Well, I've always been under the assumption that we're
I'm new here, so I'm still figuring out. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess this number on the front page of the budget request is to be the same. and then anything above and beyond that deserves the fifth page.
Yeah, correct, which I think is part of, I think you're both talking about similar things here, and I think it's important when Commissioner Kelly talks about the, you know, percentage of revenues that come from Douglas County and which revenues you're able to raise privately. You know, part of what makes agencies agencies and not departments is that we don't build in automatic increases for services and programs. I don't do that across the board.
Sure.
And so I think that's, so if the ask is really a 3% a year annual increase going retroactively for a couple years and then maybe going forward, if that's really what the ask is, we also, I would make you put that in a supplemental request. Because that's not something generally under a flat mill levy I'm able to accommodate. And we don't, and if other agencies want that, they request that through supplemental requests. Given a flat mill levy only going up now under a tax lid of the new growth rate plus CPI, I generally don't have the room. I mean, this community partners portion of our budget is $7 million. So you can imagine what a 3% increase would be on each of, on that. So that's, there's just really no room under a flat mill levy to do that.
Are you satisfied with the response?
Yeah, I got the answer. Okay. Thanks. Appreciate it.
So I'd like to say, it's been a little bit of a rougher go around than we've had in any of these other themed groups. This is the awkward part of having everyone grouped, because that's probably a conversation that would have been nice to have had without an audience. But I want to reassure you that I think, and I suspect our commission knows, that you are probably the best extension agency in the state. And the support you have in Douglas County and among the citizens is phenomenal. You could have packed this room to the rafters with people who will stand up and defend your agency and everyone who works in it. So there may be some budget disagreements here, but please don't interpret that as dissatisfaction with the actual work of Douglas County Extension in Douglas County, because it's phenomenal, from urban programs to rural programs to high-level policy. You're the go-to guy in the state for certain areas in food policy and you know, Federal Reserve, entrepreneurial shifts in the future. I mean, the whole, it's we are remarkably lucky to have you and your staff and you know, everything you guys do. So please don't walk out if you're feeling a lack of appreciation for the reach that you all have in Douglas County.
I understand, and I really appreciate the comments, Commissioner. Yeah.
Can I just make one real quick comment, just as a member of this board? We are very personnel heavy budget. There's not a lot of fluff in our budget. Most of it is all in personnel costs. And our ultimate goal is to keep good, qualified people who are willing to work towards what we want in Douglas County. And I think, as I've said on this board, we've tried to give that 3%, but our employees have not always gotten that 3%. But that's something we would like to be able to do in order to keep employees. And I would like to just kind of address why we don't charge for some things. I'm an ag producer, full-time ag producer. You charge too much for a service. I can't afford to do it. And one thing I've always been very proud to be a part of the extension unit is that they've been able to offer programs that are helpful to producers, agritourism, youth, across the board at a very, very low cost that others may not be able to. We offer programs to youth in this county that in other counties cost a lot more, and they don't have the participation level that we do. And so I think that's important to remember what we do across the board. In our partnerships and collaborations and the impact. And we are, like I said, a very heavy board, but we also have many, many dedicated volunteers that provide probably close to $500,000 worth of help to keep this agency going.
Well, I mean, with Nancy, appreciate everything you do. I'm just trying to understand. My questions are more of just how you got to that budget request. Just trying to, I think that's the point of these, is to sort of understand where that budget request came from and how that's there, and get all the information that we can so we can make the best decision. What you guys are doing is awesome, and you should keep them low. I mean, I wish we could keep them free, you know? I mean, that's really what we'd like to do.
I'm more than happy to answer whatever other questions you might have at a later date.
And I guess I would just echo, I think most of the folks in this room that are involved with Extension know about my personal commitment to Extension and to programs involving 4-H. And so I am a huge supporter of the things that are done out of 2021-10 Harper. Right. It's just simply, I think it's also helpful for your stakeholders to understand some of our financial constraints. Sure. So it's really just an educational effort for you all to understand some of the financial constraints placed upon the county. Under a flat tax lid, we have a really significantly less ability to accommodate new requests, and that's on our entire $112 million budget. So that was all my only intent in the questions, was to sort of elucidate that.
We appreciate your volunteerism for the organization and support.
All right. Thank you again to all of you for everything you do for the county. Megan, if I don't see you, best wishes, and thank you very much for your leadership. Bye.
Randy, would you mind sending, just because I'm not very good at finding these things, would you mind sending either all of us or just Sarah, and she'll distribute, like, the conservation, Douglas County conservation policies and bylaws?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
Thank you.